Okay, so we're on Daf Tzadi Tet today. This was the Shabbos's Daf. So I'm going to begin on the bottom of Tzadi Chenmebeis 98b. We'll begin 1 minute. Yeah, the bottom line on 98b, the bottom line in the Gemara. Okay, so this is Tanu Rabbanan, Charutzim ayu krashim v'chalulim ayu ha'adanim. Again, they had these boards that form the walls of the Mishkan, of the Kodesh and the Kodesh Kedashim. So the boards were 10 amot high, and then one amma, width, and then 1.5 amma in length, one amma by 1.5 amma, and then 10 amot in height. So at the ends of the board, they were like two teeth, like they call them tenons, T-E-N-O-N, and they sit, and the tenons sit in sockets. So the Braisa says, Charutzim ayu krashim, that they were like chiseled away because they have to have like these two teeth. V'chalulim hayu ha'adanim, and the adanim were hollowed out so the teeth fit into the sockets, and then that's the way that works. Now on the top line on Sadi Tetam and Aleph, v'nirin krasim b'lulaod kechokvim barakia. Again, there were different coverings in the Mishkan, either three or four. So the lower covering is called the Mishkan. The lower covering is the wool covering. And wool and linen, and then the covering above it is called ohel. And then above that, you have the rodi lima adamim and the rot techashim, that might be one or two. So on the bottom one, so they had strips. So there were 10 strips, but 5 strips were sewed together and 5 strips were sewed together, and then the two were linked together with these hooks. So it says veneer and krasim balulaod, the hooks and the hooks appeared kichokvim rakia, like stars in heaven. And Rashi here says, let me see, he says, one second. The article adds on that they had 50 loops of blue wool that were sewn at the end of each set. So it means like the golden hooks against the blue wool looked like the stars in the heaven. All right. Now, the top line in Sadi Tenem and Aleph, Tan Rabbanan, we learn the Braisa, Yiriyota Tachtonod, Shotchelet Vishal Argamon Vishotilachani, the lower curtains. So when we talk about curtains, we're talking about the roof. In other words, it's like a tarpaulin that goes over the Mishkan. And then there's also Klaim, there are also curtains that surround the Chatzir. We're not talking about those Klaim, we're talking about the curtains that are the roof. So he says, Yiriyota, the lower Yiriyot, which are shotchelet, which is the blue dyed wool, vishal argaman, the purple dyed wool, vishal tlachani, the crimson dyed wool. So we got a lot of different types of wool, vishal sheish, and linen. It's strange because, we always think of, like wool and linen is shatnez. Shatnez is only an Easter to wear the shatnez, but in the Mishkan, Yiriyot have shatnez, so to speak, and the Kohen Gadol also, he wears shatnez in the Mishkan. He says, Be'el Yonot, Shema Aseizim, the upper one, it means the next one up, and we're on Sadi Tedamad Aleph, around the fourth, fifth line, so 99a, so he says, V'shema Aseizim, the goat-haired covering, he says, Ugedola Chachma Shinimra Be'el Yonot, Yomterimima Shinimra B'tachtonot, so greater wisdom or skill was required with the goat hair one than the wool and the linen one. He says the ilu b'tachtonot k'tiv choli shachach malei b'yatavu, because the lower covering, he's calling coverings because they have panels, strips. He goes the lower yiriyot, it says ishachach malei, she's got wisdom in her heart, so she spun it. He says v'ilu bel yonot k'tiv v'chol shemasher nasali bano tana b'chachma. It says, well, the women whose hearts inspired them with wisdom. So inspired with wisdom, we figure is a higher level of wisdom. Tavud ha'izim. V'tanya mishurim Nehemia. We learn a brisa in the name of Rabbi Nehemia. This is around 10 lines down from the top, Ruth on 99a. So he says v'tanya mishurim Rabbi Nehemia shatuf be'izim v'tavuim in ha'izim, that they washed the goat hair while it was still on the goat. And mitavu min ha'izim, and they And they spun it while it was still on the goat. If you remember, I think we did this a while ago. I think I discussed this with you. The chachma was that, you know, women could be tameot. You know, they could be anida. So this way, if it's on the animal, it's not mekabel tuma. So the chachma, did I discuss this with you or not? Anyway, so the chachma was they did it while it was on the goat. But it takes a lot of skill to do it on the goat. And then it wasn't mekabel tuma. All right. Who's got questions, comments, and thoughts on anything we did so far?
Which cover was that? That was the second cover?
Again, the lower one is called Mishkan. That's the wool and linen. And okay. The next one up is called Ohel, and that's from the goat hair.
So that's harder to make than the first one.
It took greater chachma.
Greater chachma, okay.
Right. Okay. Right. And because one time it took greater chachma because they had to spin it and wash it. Well, that's all the goat. So it definitely takes chachma. All right. What you want to say, Olivia?
Yeah. Can you remind us why it doesn't make a bel tuma when it's still on the back of the goat?
Yeah, because a baal chai, it was still connected to the animal. It's a baal chai. A baal chai is not makabel tuma.
All right.
Let's go further. All right. Now. All right, that's the end of the vacation. Now back to Masechet Shabbat. Okay, so it says, Shtei Gzus Tra'ot V'chulei. So going back to the Mishnah that we did a few days ago, we said that, remember, you had the two balconies on the same side of the Rishus HaRabim. So we said that if you're Moshe, and it's Mala Me'asara, it's above 10 Tfachim. So if you're Moshe, you extend out, so you're Chayev, but Zorek, you're not chayiv. And the Zorek might be subject to machloket, but definitely at least the Chachamim hold that way. So let's take a look further in the Gemara. So Amarav Mishum Rabbi Chiya, Agalot Tachteinu B'nei Mitzidein Rishet HaRabim. So he's, again, we're harking back to the way it was in the Mishkan. The Mishkan was where we learn all the Malachot. So if you remember, they had four wagons in the Mishkan. The B'nei Merari had four wagons, and the wagons are used to transport the Krashim. The Krashim are the beams that we were just discussing. So the beams were laid crosswise on the wagons. So in other words, it's like, you know, this it's jutting out on either side. So you had, I think, about the wagons in yesterday's daf or the daf before on Tzadichet. So Rav quotes, has a Masorah from Rabbi Chiya that the Agalot, Tachtein, underneath the wagons, Ubeinehen, is like the space between the wagons. He says, but Tzidein. Tzidein is the part that's like we're up to the wheels, where the wheels go. It's the Tzidein. In other words, the wheels extended from the wagon. So the space between the wagon and the wheels, including the wheels, that's Tzidein. And Beinein means anything out from there. So Beinein, like the Krashim were extending out, but that's Beinein. So all of those things, Rishut HaRabim. Those are all Rishut HaRabim. And those underneath the wagon, to the sides of the wagon, and you know, that's all Rishut HaRabim. So now, Amar Abaye, so Rabbi says between one wagon and the next wagon, in other words, laterally, in other words, you had two wagons, one next to another, two wagons next to another. Those are all the wagons. So between wagon A and the wagon to its right, you know, the one that's next door to it, he says, is like the length of one wagon. In other words, the length of one wagon was five amot. So he wants to say between wagon and wagon was also five amot. Between wagon and wagon, yeah, you need the diagrams from this. If you have the art scroll, you have some nice diagrams. And I think you do. Does anybody here not have the art scroll in front of them? I think you all have art scrolls in front of you, right? Who does not have an art scroll? Okay, Aaron Gershon. All right, do you have pictures in your Gemara? What do you have, Aaron Gershon? Do you have any Gemara?
Unfortunately, my Gemara is in New York, and I'm in Florida.
But do you have a Gemara in front of you or not?
No, I have a standard Gemara. All right, on the screen.
Okay, that's fine. Also, that's fine. Also. Okay. Let's go back. Okay, muting. Okay, so it means between one wagon and the next wagon is five amot. When we say five amot, he means that you have 2.5 amot of overhang from the krashim and 2.5 amot of overhang from the krashim. So with the sacha kol, it's five amot. He says, okay, so bin agala, how long was each wagon? In other words, between the wagons was five amot. That's the same as the length of the wagon. So how long was each wagon? So the Gemara says that each wagon was chamesh amot, was five amot. So it was five amot in length. And then the space between the wagons is like from wheel to wheel of the wagons was five amot of, you know, the wagon next door. So he says, lamali ba'arbu palgasagi. Why do I need the wagons being five amot in length? Four and a half amot would suffice. So the Gemara is again figuring. We have the krashim. The krashim are on their sides. So one side is one amma, the other side is one and a half amot. So the Gemara is figuring if it's on the one and a half amma side, so then if it's on the one and a half amma side, so it only needs, if I have three piles, it only needs four and a half amot. If I have, you know, if each keresh is one and a half amot on one side, which it is, one and a half amot, and then I would have three piles, it would add up to four and a half amot, right? Four and a half amot. So why do I need a wagon that's five amot in length? Now, the Gemara thinks I could just squeeze it in exactly with four and a half amot. Or, in the alternative, if I put it on the one amma side, in other words, the keresh is one amma by one and a half amma. If I put it on the one amma side, so then I would put four piles. Now, I can't put more than four piles. Even though I have five amot, I can't stick five piles in there because on the one amma side, there are rings that stick out of the krashim. There are rings sticking it out. So the rings that stick out would not, you know, permit you to put five piles, but I could put four piles there. So either way, I dice it. I don't need five amot. That's what the Gemara is asking. All right? Okay, we're on, Robert, welcome. We're on Sadi Tetam and Aleph, 99A, around 10 lines down, okay? So that we're a few lines, we're on eight lines above the Mishnah. So this is Chamesh Lamali, Ba'arbu Palgasagi. So the Gemara says, Ki Hechid Lo Lidchuku Krashim. So the Gemara is somewhat choser from what it said before, and the Gemara says that we don't want the Krashim to be pressed together. In other words, it doesn't work so well. If I would exactly, let's say I would have the three piles, each one is an amma and a half. If I put them like squish them all together, so that doesn't fit so well exactly. That's what he's saying. He says, "Amar Rava tzidei agala kimlo rochav agala." Then Rava says the tzidei agala. Now the tzidei agala is the space between the wagon and the end of the wheels. So tzidei agala, kimlo rochav agala, is the same as the width of the agala. So the agala is 2.5 amot in width. The wagon is 2.5 amot in width. And the tzidei agala are each 1.25 amma. So if the wagon is 2.5, and I have on one side 1.25 amma, the other side 1.25 amma, so the wagon is 2.5 amot, and then the tzidim is also 2.5 amot. Okay? So tzidei agala, kimlo rochav agala. He says, "V'kama rochav agala? How wide was the agala? I already told you, shtei amot mechza. So it was 2.5 amot in width. Each wagon was 2.5 amot in width. So lamali ba'amtu upalga sagit. So again, we said the krashim are being laid crosswise across the wagon. So the Gemara assumes, why do I need a wagon that's 2.5 amot? I can have a wagon that's 1.5 amma. The Gemara, I don't know how the Gemara gets exactly that figure, 1.5 amma, but the Gemara is figuring the krashim would be stable if they were on a surface of 1.5 amma. Again, the krashim are 10 amma in length, and so it's being supported like on a small section of 1.5 amma. So the Gemara says, Ki hechi lo ligdadu krashim. So the Gemara says we don't want to leave it on 1.5 amma because then it's like, you know, going to tip here, there, and the other place. So that's why we don't do it that way. Ela, so the Gemara says, the kaimelon derech rishut rabim sheshesrei amma. Now the Gemara says we hold that rishus rabim, the public thoroughfare on Shabbat, is 16 amot in width, minimum 16 amot in width. And we learn it from the Mishkan. Anand gamrin lami Mishkan. So we learn everything from the Mishkan. So where are we learning from the Mishkan? That they had the two wagons, one next to the other, and then wherever the wagons are going is the Rishus HaRabim. So the Gemara is figuring that we're going to figure again, we have two wagons that are next to one another. We're going to calculate the space between the outer wheels of one and the outer wheels of the other. That's the space we're going to calculate for this. So in terms of what the minimum shear for the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is. So the Gemara says, Dikaimalan derech shir rabim sheshes re'ama, ananta gemilu mishkan, demishkan chamesar havoi. So in the Mishkan, it comes out to only be 15 amot, because if you look, it helps a lot to have the diagram, but from the one minute, wait, Yosef, just wait 1 minute, okay? We'll make this really simple. Look, each keresh is 10 amot. Both wagons are carrying krashim. So from the end of one keresh to the other keresh would be 20 amot, right? If I have two wagons, each one next to the other, and each one is carrying a keresh, and each keresh is 10 amot, so I get 20 amot. But the part, the outer part, from beyond the wheels on the left side and the right side is up to another 5 amot. So the only part that definitely must be in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, in other words, we're looking for the minimum shear for the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. So the minimum shear for the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim has got to be where the wagons are traversing with their wheels. So from the outer wheel of one to the outer wheel of the other is 15 amot, because each keresh sticks out on the side 2.5 amot. So if it's 2.5 amot on the left, 2.5 amot on the right, that's 5 amot. I have 20 amot minus 5, 15 amot. Okay, I'll be with you in 1 minute, Yosef. So the Gemara says, Chameser Havai, Amti Yetera. So why do we say 16 amot? If, Sof Kol Sof, it's coming out that 15 amot seems like the minimum shear for Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. So why do I say that it's 20 amot? So the Gemara is that it's 16 amot rather. So the Gemara is Amti Yetera Havoi, the Havakoi Ben Levi, the Chimishtalfi Krashim Havanakit Lahu. The Gemara says there was an additional amma of space between the wagons. So the Ben Levi, in other words, let's say somebody from Shevet from Merari, the Bnei Merari, if he sees like one of the krashim is about to like get loose or slip off, he has a space where he could, you know, move over there in the middle and adjust the load. So because that extra amma, so it adds up to 16 amot. Okay, Yosef, what do you want to ask me?
No, I was just going to calculate a different way. We said each wagon is 5 and it's...
Wait. Say again slowly. I can't hear you. Say again.
I was just going to calculate it a different way.
All right, but does it add up the way I calculated?
It adds up to 15.
Okay, fine. That's the main thing. Okay, so now we end up with 16 amos. Okay, so let me just summarize everything we did for everyone and then we'll move on. So basically, we've been talking about things in the Mishkan. We spoke about the construction of the krashim and the krasim and the curtains above it. And we said it was created chachma for the goat hair curtain. And then we started talking about the gzustrot or the two balconies. So that was related to the avoda that they would hand the krashim, you know, be moshit from one to another, but they wouldn't be zorek. And remember that could have been the machlok between Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, whether we learned Zorek from Moshit. But anyway, he wants to set it up, though, with the wagons. So we went through the dimensions about how much the space is between the wagons, and then we calculated out based on the wagons that the minimum shear for Rosh Hashanah Rabbim is 16 amot. Okay, I think that's it. All right, I'm going to move on. Yeah, what's up, Fern? Let me hear you. Unmute.
Sorry. What is the source for these numbers and the instructions on how to put the agalot together?
The, 1 second.
I mean, Truma Tetzave has the Mishkan measurements. I don't remember the agalot being in there.
Well, the agalot are mentioned at the end of Parshas Naso. The agalot are mentioned in Parshas Naso.
It says, with the dimensions and how to put them together?
Does not mention the dimensions. So the Gemara here says that the dimensions of the agalo, the Gemara says length of 5 amot and width of 2.5 amot. So the Gemara, I don't know if they have a Masora that way, but the Gemara says that like the 5 amot, you would need 5 amot because if I have 3 piles of krashim, each 1.5 amma.
So they deduced it.
I don't know if they had a tradition this way and now they're like, you know, filling in to explain the tradition or what. I don't know how that's working.
Are the agalot considered Divrei Kedusha, the actual agalot, if you don't have the instructions?
Well, you know, it's a little interesting because, you know, the krashim, do have kedusha. The krashim do have kedusha, and the agalot
that are used. Yeah, instructions about them.
And the agalot are used to transport the krashim.
Right.
So it seems like it would be sort of like a.
Basis ladavar.
Well, I wouldn't. But again, let's not mix the different terms. But I would say it's like maybe a tashmish for kedusha. You know, in other words, it's, so I don't know exact status in halacha, but lechora that's the way it would be. All right. Let's take a look. All right, let's see further. Okay, so now in the Mishnah, we're in the Mishnah 10 lines from the bottom on Sadi Tetam and Aleph, okay? And we're still dealing with the Melechet Hotza'ah. So the Mishnah says, Manitin Chulya Rabur Vahasela Shein Gvon Asara V'rachvan Arba'a Hanota Mehen V'notin Al Gaban Chayav Pachot Mikain Patur. So let me take the simple case. Like he's got, let's say I have a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, I have a public thoroughfare. In the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, there's a big boulder, and the boulder is 10 tfachim high and 4x4 tfachim surface on top. So then the boulder has a din in Rosh Hashanah Yachid. That's the basic idea. So if I pick something up in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim and I put it on top of the rock, even though I'm like within, you know, 2 amot of the rock, I'm chayiv for motzi me rishut the rishut. I took something from the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim and I just put it in the Rosh Hashanah Yachid, or vice versa. Now, the Mishnah also mentions Chulyat Abur. Chulyat Abur means if you have a pit in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim and it has an embankment around it. But the point is, from the top of the embankment to the bottom of the pit is 10 tefachim, and the base of the pit is at least 4 tefachim by 4 tefachim. That's also a Rosh Hashanah Yachid. Okay? Let me read the Mishnah again, and then we'll see if there's any questions on it, all right? So again, so the Mishnah says, Manitin Chulyat Abur. Chulyat Abur is the embankment of the pit. He says, Vahasela, you have the big boulder or rock. Shehin Gvoin Asara, that there are 10 tefachim high. In the case of the pit, it would be like 10 tefachim going down. V'rachban arba, and there are a minimum of 4. And what says rachban arba means 4x4 tfachim. Hano tamehen v'notin al gaban. If a person takes from that surface and puts it in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, or from the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim puts on it, he says chayav pachot mikain patur. But if it's less than that, then he's not chayav for hotzan Shabbat. Okay. Any questions on the Mishnah? All right. Let me go further. Now, the Gemara says 5 lines to the bottom. Gemara lama lidmitnei chulya rabur v'hasela. Why is it that he mentions about the embankment of the pit? He says, Litni habur v'hasela. Why doesn't the Mishnah just say you have either a cella, a boulder, or you have a pit? So the cella is up in the air and the pit is down in the ground. Why do I have to mention about this chulya rabur is the embankment around the pit? So the Gemara says, Messiah le Rabbi Yochanan. The Mishnah seems to support a halacha stated by Rabbi Yochanan. The Amar Rabbi Yochanan, said, it's starf in La'asara, that if I have a pit and it has an embankment on top, they add up to 10 tfachim. So if the pit is 6 tfachim in depth and the embankment is 4 tfachim in height, so b'sach hakol, I have 10 tfachim and I have my Rosh Hashanah Yachid. Tani Nami Hachi, we learn a brisa that supports this. The brisa says, Bor b'shut rabim amoka asara b'rachva arba'a, if I have a pit. Now, bor can mean a pit. Bor can also mean like a cistern, like you have a bor sud, you know, in Pirkei Avot, like the sealed cistern. So if I have a pit that has water in it, he says, Bor b'shut rabim amuka asara b'rachva arba, it goes to a depth of 10 tfachim, and it's 4 tfachim by 4 tfachim. Eimim alen himen b'shabbat. So I can't put my bucket and pull the bucket out from the pit on Shabbat, because then they'll be taken from the Shusiyach and Shusarabim. Now, let's turn page, the top line on Sadi Tenamid Beis. Ella imkein asula mechitzot gevo asar tefachim. Unless the Brisa adds on the top line, if I build a fence around the pit that's 10 tefachim high, so then I convert the whole area to Rosh Hashanah Yachid. So then I could put my bucket in and draw water out, because I'm in the Rosh Hashanah Yachid. The pits in the Rosh Hashanah Yachid were all fine. V'ein shotin emena b'shabbat. Now, if there is no fence, I can't drink from that pit on Shabbat. I'm thirsty, but I can't drink from the water. Elam kein hichnis la rosho verubo. Unless I stick my head and most my body over the pit. Now, that is a gzera d'rabbanan. In other words, technically speaking, if my mouth is over the pit and I just take my hand or my bucket and I'm bringing it up to my mouth, I'm not doing hotza'ah. But here, Chazal were afraid that if most of my body is away, I'll come to carry the water away from the pit. So they said you have to have Rosho Verubo. All right, does anybody remember a similar halacha elsewhere in Shas that we learned about being Machnes Rosho Verubo into a certain Rishus? None remember? By Sukkah, right? Remember Sukkah, you have a small Sukkah. So they said that the Sukkah is not kasher. It's a din to Rabbanan, unless I can be Machnes Rosho Verubo in the Sukkah. Remember, it's Gemara in Sukkah. Okay, so now the third line. Ubor v'chuyato mitztarfin la'asara. And here, the Brisa ends up at the end, and this supports what we said before and supports Rabbi Yochanan. If you have a pit, v'chuyata, and it's an embankment, they add up to the shear of 10 tefachim. All right, any questions, comments, or thoughts on anything we did so far? All right, I'm moving on. You know, I tell you, I see you have the Perush Chai there, Yosef. I forgot I have a Perush Chai in the shul. Yeah, I probably should get. But that's from a second Shabbat or Erevin. Which one do you have for
Shabbat?
Oh, I have to see. You know, I don't remember what we had anymore. All right. The fourth line from the top on Sadi Tenu Beis. You know, Taka, I think I do have a Perush Chai there. Since this whole thing with the COVID, it's like Gerush Svarad, like we're chased out. It's hard to remember what we even have there. Okay. So,
are the Minyanim during the week inside or outside?
So this morning they were outside. It was supposed to be inside for Shacharis, but decided, I'll talk to you afterwards because I'm recording right now. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. So the fourth line from the top. Baimine Rav Mordechai. Now, it says Rava, but it says on the side corrected to Rabba with a hey. Baimine Rav Mordechai me Rabba. Amud b'rishit Rabim gavoa asara v'rachav arba. Let's say I have a pillar in the Rishit Rabim, which is 10 tefachim high and 4 tefachim by 4 tefachim. So as soon as you hear those shiurim, what do I think? Rishit Yachid, right? He says, Zarak, Bizarak, Vinachal Gabav Mahu. Now, I'm in the Rishus Arabim, and I throw an object and it lands on top of that pillar. What's the halacha? Miyamrina Hariya Kira bi Isur Hariya Nacha bi Isur. Do I say you're dead meat? You did Akira bi Isur, you did the Akira in the Rishus Arabim, and then it landed in the Rishus Yachid. So that's it, you're finished, you're cooked. Odilma came with me makom paturka at yelo, or perhaps since the trajectory took it memela through makom patur again, the Rishus Rabim only goes up to 10 tefachim that we said. So if I take, let's say I'm standing, I could even be standing 3 amud away from this amud. I pick up a cheftza and I throw it, and it lands on top of the amud. So if the amud is 10 tefachim high, obviously the cheftza in its flight path had to be above 10 tefachim, and then it lands there. So am I chayav for this? This gets into this issue. We've been discussing this in previous dapim about when you're above 10 tefachim. So we mentioned on Daf Sadi Zion, remember, we had on Sadi Beis as well, we had about Reb Lazar. Reb Lazar said if a person carries above 10 tefachim, then he's chayav. That's Masa B'nei Kahat. But here we're Zorek. Here I'm throwing it. I'm throwing above 10 tefachim. Or I'm picking it up and then I'm throwing it. So Amarle, so Rabbi said to him, Matnitanhi. It's our Mishnah. The Mishnah said that if you have the rock that's in the Rishus Rabim, and I take from the rock or I put on the rock, I'm chayiv. The Gemara assumes that when the Mishnah says I put on the rock, it means whether I put it on or I throw it on, it would be the same thing. That's what you assume. So you're saying the Mishnah says, Mefurash, that you would be chayiv. He's Atashai L'Rav Yosef. So then he, this is, who's doing the questioning here is Rav Mordechai.
Yeah,
then Rav Mordechai goes, asks Rav Yosef. Rav and Rav Yosef are bar pluktas throughout Shas. He asks Rav Yosef, Amarle Matnitani. He says, it's El Bazach. It's our Mishnah. He says, Atashai L'Abayi. He doesn't stop. He really is like gangbusters. So he goes, La'Abayi. He asks Abayi. Amarle Matnitani. He says, this is also our Mishnah. So it sounds like, I mean, it's a little bit like, not saying in this case, this is maybe for Limud, but like, you know, it's like forum shopping. Some people like to ask a lot of rabbis, you know, this, that, the other, until they get the answer they like. But if you're asking one rabbi to paskin something, then you should just, you know, abide by that. But let's see in the Gemara. So Amar Lahu, one second, give me 5 lines, we'll be there. Okay, now. Amar Lahu, so he said to them, so Mordechai said to them, Kuchu Baruka Dahadadi Tavitu, you're all spitting with the same spittle. In other words, you're all saying the same thing. He says, Amrulei, Va'adlo Tispera, they said, what, you have shilas about this? He says, Vahatzan, we learn in the Mishnah, Hanotel Mehen, and here the Bach corrects it, Vahanotein al Gaban, or a person puts on them, means on the rock, Chayav, it could be in the pit as well, you're Chayav. So Amar Lahu, Sahira Mordechai said to all of them, Dilma Matnitin B'machat. Maybe our Mishnah is talking about with a person through a needle. Like a needle is a very small thing. So it could have, you know, even though it might go up like a millimeter above the tenth fachim, but it's so de minimis, he didn't think that would make a difference. Maybe that's not determinative of our question. So he said, Machanami, Yivshar Dilmadalya Purta. So he said, look, even if he throws a needle, it's got to go a little above 10th Fachim. So he says, so the Gemara says, the Itle Mursha, it could be the rock could have had like a little outcropping, and perhaps the needle and landed on the outcropping. In other words, once I say the rock is Rishusiyachid, so even the sides of the rock are Rishusiyachid. So if it has a little outcropping below the 10th Fachim mark, and the needle lands on that. In other words, it doesn't have to be that the needle ever went above 10th fachim. He says, Inami deramya becharitza, or perhaps it landed in a crevice in the side of the rock. Also the same idea. Now, from this, so again, let's just summarize, and I'll take your question in a second, Yosef. So the question we asked is, if I'm in the Rishusa Rabim, and I have the Rishusa Yachid, which is the boulder, which is 10th fachim high, and then I throw an object and it lands on top of the boulder, and I'm less than dalet amot away. So am I chayev for hotzah from the hachnasa, really, from the Rishus Rabim to the Rishus Yachid, because the trajectory took it above 10th fachim. So the Gemara thought at first, like mukrach from the Mishnah, you're chayev. Then Rav Mordechai had these hezberim, but they're sort of dochak hezberim. That's the way the Mefarshim take it. That's the way the article brought down. The halacha, we hold that indeed you would be chayiv in that case. So if I pick up something in the Rishus Rabim and I throw it and it lands in the Rishus Yachid, even though the trajectory took it above the 10th fachim, I'm chayiv. Okay, what's up, Yosef? Yosef first, then I'll take
it. Yeah, how does our Mishnah answer Rav Mordechai's question?
The Mishnah says that if you have a seller in the Rishus Rabim, Hanotem Lehem Vanotin Al Gaban Chayav, if a person takes from the seller or puts on the seller and he's in the Rishus Rabim, he's Chayav. The Gemara assumes that when it says Notin Al Gabav, it also means Zorek. That's the way the Gemara assumes, that it also includes the aspect of being Zorek. So I'm in the Rishus Rabim and I'm Zorek, I'm Chayav. Okay? All right. What's up, Fern?
What is the role, I've always been confused about this since Thursday night, of the Makom Patur? Does it serve as an interruption? In other words, the fact that we came to this question means that we think that you go from Rishut HaRabim to the Makom Patur, so that's allowed, and then the Makom Patur, in other words, you cut the transaction into two.
Well, that's,
and it didn't work out that
well,
way.
Well, right. That's the $64,000 question. Well, what is the impact of the trajectory going through Makom Patur? That's just another way of saying the question. But that was the question we had. And it was clearly, if I take from the Rishus HaRabim and I put the object in Makom Patur, Makom Patur is, let's say I have an object that's less than 4x4 Tfachim rising in the Rishus HaRabim, so then I'm not Chayiv because that's Makom Patur. But the question is, when it goes...
Even according to Rav Elazar?
According to everybody. So when I pick up in something in the Rishus HaRabim, I do Hanachal in the Rishus HaYachid, but it went through the Makom Patur, through Zrika. So am I chayiv or not? So like the most Rishonim say I'm chayiv, all right?
That it doesn't interrupt it enough
Let me see what the article said here. I don't know, they had something here about it. 1 minute. Yeah, right. So he says, this is the end of footnote 12. He says, Forrest, the halacha follows the Amoraim to the inquiry submitted who consider our Mishnah clear proof one is liable for in Rav Mordechai's case. So he quotes from the Ritva, and he says some Iri as well, so mainly you be chayev. Okay, so moving on to the Gemara. All right, now, let me find the place. Okay, we're up to Amar Rav Miasha, around 10 lines down on Sadi Tenamid Beis. Okay, Amar Rav Miasha by Rabbi Yochanan, Kotel Bershita Rabim Gavoa Asara Ve'enu Rachav Arba. Let's say I have a wall in the Bershita Rabim, which is 10 tefachim in height, but it's less than 4 tefachim in width. Umukaf Lekarmeli. And then it surrounds a Karmelit, Ba'asa Rishita Yachid, and turns into Rishita Yachid. So it means like this. Let's say the front yard of my house is a Karmelit, which is what it would be. In other words, I don't have a fence around my front yard. I don't think in Great Neck you're allowed to have a fence around the front yard, right? So I don't think anybody in Great Neck's got a fence around their front yard. They hold the fancy zoning regulations. So I have an unfenced area in front of my house, and then I build a wall around the Karmelit. It's a Karmelit. I build a wall around the Karmelit, and now I convert it into Rishus Yachid. But the wall / fence is less than 4 tefachim in width. So he says, Bizarak v'nachal gabav. And now I am standing in the Rishus HaRabim. I throw an object and it lands on top of the wall. Mahu. Miyamridan kemendonu rachav arba makom paturhu. Do I say, since the wall is less than 4 tefachim in width, the wall itself is a makom patur, right? In other words, in order to be Rishus Yachid, you have to have, in other words, what is the status of the wall? In other words, a wall, if it would be 4 tefachim in width and certainly 4 tefachim in length and it's 10 tefachim high, so then the wall itself would be a Rishus Yachid. So my object is landing on top of the wall. So he says here, do I say that's makom patur? Mela, I'm not chayev for that hotza'a. It's really hachnasa. When I use the term hotza'a, hotza'a is really from Rishus Yachid, Rishus Rabim. Rishus Rabim, Rishus Yachid is hachnasa, but I may use it a little bit loosely. Oh, Dilma came into us over Shuri Yachid, Kaman Damali Dami. Or do I say, since the wall created a Rishus Yachid, so we view it as if like the whole Rishus Yachid is filled up with objects, and the wall now is like thicker. In other words, the wall is creating a Rishus Yachid. So Mela is like, the wall is like part of a big block. So then that's the question. So Amar Ula, you know, this would really be, if you're accused of violating Shabbos b'Maisid and they want to give you skila, so this is really cutting edge. Which way does it go? So let's take a look. So the Gemara says, okay, so Amar Ula Kavachomer. So we're near the small Aleph. So Amar Ula Kavachomer Lacher Mo Semachita Latzmal Koshkein. So we listen to Kavachomer. If the wall itself is creating the whole Rishus Yachid for the whole area, certainly it could turn itself into Rishus Yachid. Itmar Nami, it was stated as well, Amar Reb Chiya Bar Ashi, Amar Rav, V'chein Amar Reb Yitzchak, Amar Reb Yochanan, Kotel Bereshit HaRabim, Gavo Asara, if I have a Kotel in the Bereshit HaRabim, which is 10 Tfachim in height, V'ein Rachav Arba, Umukaf L'Karmelit, and then it surrounds a Karmelit. He says, "V'asa Rishus Yachid," and converts the Karmelit into Rishus Yachid, Hazorik V'nachal Gabav Chayav. So he learns explicitly that if you throw and it lands on the wall, you're chayav. Lacher mo semachitza la'atzmo lo kol shekein. So other people not. Okay, who's got questions, comments, or thoughts on anything we did?
So any Karmelit that you surround with walls turns into Rishus Yachid?
So the it's not. If it's larger. If it's larger than a Beit Satayim, we had this in the first parak, no? If it's larger than Beit Satayim, larger than 50 amot by 100 amot, and it's not mukaf ladira, and it's not surrounded for residential purposes, so then it would remain a Karmelit.
Even with the wall,
yeah. In other words, the idea is, so if, let's say Central Park is surrounded by a fence, so, but it's not mukaf ladira. Nobody's living in Central Park. Today, I don't know, they have everybody's like sleeping here or the other place, but it's not mukaf ladira. So then it would still remain a Karmelit. Then it would still remain a Karmelit, even though it has the fence around it. Okay? All right, let's see further. I'm going to move on unless anybody has questions. Okay, now. Okay, we're up to by Rabbi Yochanan. By Rabbi Yochanan is around 20 lines from the bottom. By Rabbi Yochanan, Bor Tisha, let's say I have a bor that's 9 tefachim in depth in the Rishus HaRabim. But Akar Minu Chulya, And then I, on Shabbat, I stick my hand into the bore and I dig out a chulia as a clod of dirt, bishlima la asara. And so in the act of taking the clod of dirt, I create the Rishas Yachid, right? In other words, both things are happening simultaneously. I have the bore is 9 tefachim in depth. So it only needs one more tefach to be Rishas Yachid. So I stick my hand on Shabbat, I dig in, and I dig out a piece of dirt that's like one tefach, and I have the clod of dirt in my hand. And now it's considered, 10 tefachim in depth, and I take the clod of dirt. Do I say that both things happen simultaneously? With the art school had umachayev, am I chayev or not? In other words, where the act of creating the rishus and the act of the akira happen simultaneously, am I chayev for that akira or not? That's the question. This is Ve'imtim Salomar, and if you'll assume in the previous inquiry, Kevin Lohavi Mechitza Asara Me'ikara Lo Mechayev, if I'll assume that no, I'm not Chayev for that simultaneous act with Akira, he says, Bor Asara Benatana Tocha Chulia Umiata Mahu. Let's say I have a chulia, I have a clod of dirt, and I put it in the bor. In other words, I have the clod of dirt I took from the Shus Rabim, and now I put the clod of dirt in the pit, which was exactly 10 tefachim in depth, and now it's no longer 10 tefachim in depth. Mahu. And again, it just has to be 4 tefachim by 4 tefachim, so that's in the dimensions. So 4 tefachim by 4 tefachim is, let's say, 16 inches, whatever. So he says, Mahu, Hanachat Chefetz Vesilich Mechitza Bahadei Dali Ka'atu, where I have the putting down the Chefetz, and silk mechitza means destroying the rishus to happen together. Mechayev alo mechayev. Now, from the question, so the Bali Tosfos, they mentioned the art scroll. There's a Tosfos in the first parak on Daf Ched, and this is in footnote 20, that you see that for Akira, I could have greater requirements than for Hanacha. In other words, the Gemara had a question by Akira. And then the Gemara said that even if I assume that by Akira, they both can't happen simultaneously, but the Gemara has a question, what about by Hanacha? So it sounds like for Akira, like think of it like maybe like a spaceship taking off and landing, It's harder to get the rocket shot off than to land it down. So you need a greater like threshold clarity in the Rishuyot, possibly for the Akira than for the Hanacha. But either way, we have the question, okay? So the Gemara says, that's the question that Rabbi Yochanan posed. So now we're 10 lines to the bottom on Sadi Tenrabeis. So Tif Shalei Mitidei. So the Gemara says we should be able to deduce an answer to our question from Rabbi Yochanan's own statement elsewhere. Ditnan, because we learn in the Mishnah, this is on Daf Kuf, which was today's Daf. So Robert, I think you had this Mishnah already, and Ruth, you had the Mishnah, you heard already. So Ditnan, we learn the Mishnah, Hazorik Arba Amot Bekotel, the Malami Asar Tfachim, I'm in the Rishus Rabim, and I take a Cheftza, and I'm exactly 4 Amot from a wall. There's a wall in the Rishus Rabim, and I throw something at the wall. He says, Kizorek Ba'avir. So then it lands above the 10th Fakim, it's like throwing in the air. Lamata Me'asara, if I throw below 10th Fakim, Kizorek Ba'ara, it's like throwing like to the ground. Ba'zorek Ba'ara, it's Arba Amot Chayav. If I throw something on the ground, so I'm chayev for bimavir arba moshus rabim. So I'm zorek and I threw it at the wall. Mamelal also be chayev. V'havinabab, we were osek in this mishnah. We asked the following question: v'halonach, but the thing doesn't rest on the wall. In other words, the Gemara is assuming I take a cheftza and I throw it at the wall, and now it bounces, ricochets or bounces off the wall. So now it's less than dalet amot. In other words, the Avera is being Mavi or Arba Amot Rishus Rabim. I cause a Chepsa to go 4 Amot or more in the Rishus Rabim. I'm exactly Dalet Amot from the wall. I throw, let's say I have a ball. I throw the ball at the wall, but then the ball bounces off the wall, and now it's less than Dalet Amot. So how come I'm Chayiv? So the Gemara says, so Va'amar Rabbi Yochanan, so Rabbi Yochanan said, and this will be familiar to our Daf Yomi people, B'Devela Shemena Shaninu. So Rabbi Yochanan says, the Mishnah is talking about where you have the sticky piece of a fig cake. It's like, you know, so I take this sticky piece of the fig cake and I throw it at the wall. I'm exactly Dalai from the wall, and the sticky fig cake attaches itself to the wall and doesn't ricochet or go back. So Mela, now I'm chayev for the Bimavir Dalai and Shusarabim. But am I Hakamamayit me arba amot? So the Gemara says, why am I chayev though? The act of sticking on the wall will create like less than Dalet Amot. In other words, I had Dalet Amot going to the wall. We're assuming now the sticky fig cake is going to become part of the wall. The sticky fig cake is now part of the wall. So now, at the moment that the sticky fig cake lands, now the wall is less than Dalet Amot away from me. So I wasn't Mavir Dalet Amot. But nevertheless, the proof would be, and this is Rabbi Yochanan explaining the Mishnah, that we don't, things that happen simultaneously, we don't give, you know, in other words, we don't say that I'm that it we don't say it destroyed the wall, that I'm chayav for hotza'a. So that being the case, So Mela, we think that the same thing would apply here. So if I take the chulia and I land, I put it in the pit, and now the pit is less than dalet amot, less than ten tfachim, I should be chayev. Just like I'm chayev when I throw the sticky fig cake against the wall, I'm chayev for hotzah of dalet amot. Even though, in other words, the fact that it's going to remain on the wall doesn't make a difference. I'm chayev. So too, when I take the clod of dirt and I put it in the pit, and now I've destroyed the tenth fachim, but I should be chayiv as well. That's what we think. So and then we're able to prove from Rabbi Yochanan's statement. So the Gemara says the two are not comparable. Hatam lomavatele. With the sticky fig cake, does not intend to keep the sticky fig cake on the wall forever. Right? It's not part of the wall. It's coming off the wall. He says here, hacha mavatele. Here with the pit, I intend to leave it there. So that case is not comparable. So we don't have an answer for our case with the sum.
Can I ask the question?
Yeah, in 30
even if
seconds.
You don't plan.
All right, go ahead.
Sorry.
Go ahead. What?
Even if you don't plan to abandon the fig cake, because the fig cake has depth, you don't have the four amot anymore anyway, having nothing to do with the abandonment of the fig cake.
No. Let's go slowly with this. The idea is
that the fig cake becomes part of the wall.
Right. So the wall itself, Kotel, Malam Yasarat Fahim, Zirbavir, right. So if the fig cake, I'm throwing exactly Dalet Amot. Now, if the fig cake is part of the wall, then I'm not throwing Dalet Amot. So what do you want to say is happening?
But even if it's not part of the wall,
right?
If you're throwing...
If it's not part of the wall, and it's then I've done Dalet Amot. In other words, if the Cheftza is resting at a point, Dalet Amot away from me. So I've
But doesn't the size of the fig cake...
No, there was a surface, and it was, I have to go where, like, the surface where it landed. It was the surface, this landing surface is Dalet Amot away. So I'm chayev. That's the way it works.
You're making the fig cake part of your hand when you're throwing it, essentially.
I don't know about part of the hand. In other words, I have the Akira at point A, the Hanach at point B. It lands on a point Dalet Amot away from where I am in Rosh Hasharabim. So I'm chayev. That's it. That's the end of the inquiry. All right. Any other questions, comments, or thoughts?
Yes, I have a question.
What's up?
What difference does it make whether this item you're throwing sticks to the wall or not? Bottom line, you threw four amot in the Rosh Hasharabim.
No, because if we say it's permanently attached to the wall, so then I haven't thrown, then it becomes like part of the wall. Then it becomes a part of the wall.
If I throw something for Amod in Rishul Harabim, I'm chayav, no? Whether it sticks to the wall or doesn't stick to the wall.
Yeah, one second. We'll see in a minute.
But I think it cuts the Dalet Amod by the size of the fig cake, or by the increase in the size of the wall. I think that's the theory.
Yeah, he says like this. Okay, look at footnote 24 in the art scroll for people who have art scroll. He says, at this point, the Gemara assumes the fig cake becomes considered an extension of the wall, just as the earth thrown into the tent becomes an extension of the pit's base. Now, if the fig cake was not deemed part of the wall, then we would say the fig cake had come to rest on the surface of the wall, which is 4 amot away from the original location. But now the fig cake is part of the wall. We cannot say it rests on the wall since it is the wall. Rather, it now rests exactly where it is, which is less than 4 amot from the original location. Although this occurs simultaneously with the Hanacha, Shmuel's throw is liable. In other words, if it's part of the wall, so it's not resting on the wall, it is the wall. In other words, like the wall is like this other object which is coming up in the Rishus HaRabim. Now the fig cake has become part of the wall. So I don't know, that's the way it's going. That's the best I have for this, Yosef. Anyway. All right, 1 minute. We'll do this again. One minute.
Can I throw a ball 4 amot in the Rishus HaRabim?
And you would be chayev for that.
Yeah, so what difference does that make if this cake sticks to the wall? It doesn't stick to the wall.
Because it's not a four full amot then.
Yeah.
You have to subtract the size of the fig cake.
Yeah. So we're talking about,
you're not getting your shear.
So in other words, if it doesn't stick, you're patar?
No, so we'd like to, it's again, so if it doesn't stick, it ricochets back. So you did less than dalet amot, you would be patur. It's 100% correct.
But I already went 4 amot.
Yeah, but it has to come to hanacha. Hanacha means it has to rest. So it's just ricocheting against the wall. I'm not chayav for being mavir arba amot ushas arabim. So the Gemara is saying that if it's an extraneous object and it rests on the wall, I'm chayav. But if it becomes part of the wall, then I'm not chayev, because now the wall itself, it's become part of the wall, and the wall is less than dalet amot. That's the way the
Gemara says. Okay, so now I have to raise a question, and I raised it at the top this morning. Ruth, stop smiling. Okay, here's the question.
Now we have
three lawyers, so let's see how we do on this time. If my intent when I threw the figs was that I knew I was either intending to do something that was prohibited. Let's say that's my intent. But just by circumstance, the thing hits the wall and ricochets and it doesn't stick. So I'm not like, doesn't intent take precedence over what actually happens?
Yeah,
or let me rephrase that. Why shouldn't intent take precedence over right. what actually happens?
Okay, so this is what the same as what you asked me last week. So
that's right. I'm still working on getting an answer.
Well, I gave you an answer, but I'll give you the answer again. Okay.
Okay. So,
To do a malacha, we're talking about being chayav for a malacha. Being chayav for a malacha, to use lawyer language, you need mens rea and actus reus. I have to have the criminal intent and the criminal act. So if I only have the criminal intent but not the criminal act, let's say I intend to murder you, and instead I shoot my gun and miss you. So am I guilty for second-degree murder because I shot at you?
No, you're guilty for attempted murder.
Okay, but we're just focused, that's still a crime, isn't it? All right. So, but in halacha,
but that's not the definition of the malacha.
Right. So in halacha, we're only focusing on the definition of malacha. So the definition of malacha is that I have the intent to do the malacha, and I do the malacha. Now, the fact that you had the bad intent is something that you're culpable gabi shemayim. In other words, like the Gemara speaks about it, and Rashi talks about it in Chumash. Let's say a person took a shvua, not to eat a certain food, and he takes an object which he thinks is that food, but it really is not the food. So he thought he's violating the shvua, but he didn't violate the shvua. So he still needs kapara, but he hasn't done. It's on the Rashi. Hashem yislach la. Hashem will forgive her. So it's like a woman makes a neder. Let's change the case. A woman makes a neder, and then she violates the neder. But unbeknownst to the woman, her husband already nullified the neder. You got it? So a woman made a neder. She's not going to eat any strawberry shortcake anymore, or the strawberry shortcake is forbidden to her. And then unbeknownst to her, her husband heard about the neder, and the husband nullified the neder. So the neder is a nullity, but she didn't know that. And then she cuts and has, I've had it, I'm eating strawberry shortcake. So has she done the Aveira? So the Gemara says she didn't do the Aveira, the Torah says, Vashem Yisakla, Hashem will forgive her, meaning that she still has to do tshuva, because she thought she's doing something wrong, but she didn't do something wrong. So that's really your issue. But in terms of the in terms of the halacha, in terms of violating Shabbos,
it's like strict constructionism.
Well, I don't know. It does have to be so strict, but
no, no. It's because you're saying the halakha is X, and even if your intent is to violate X, right, if you don't actually do it,
right,
you're a putar.
Yeah. Now let me come back. Yosef, are you still there again? Yosef. Yeah. So let's come back with that case with the wall. The wall itself may not be the Rishus HaRabim. The wall itself may not be the Rishus HaRabim, but it's coming to rest on the wall. The surface of the wall would have a din of the Rishus HaRabim. So again, so if the object becomes part of the wall, I have not done an act of hotza'ah because it hasn't gone dalet amos in Rishus HaRabim, and now it's part of this wall, and the wall is a different Rishus, you could say, or something like that. But if it's not, not part of the wall, so now it's come to rest in the Rishus HaRabim, right on the dotted line of the Rishus HaRabim. That's the best I have with it, Yosef. All right.
Okay.
All right. Now let me go further in the Gemara. Now, okay. Now we're up to by Robert. By the way, what was the answer you got at the first year, Robert? I can't hear you. You got to unmute yourself.
Avi's take was the same. We got into it a little more deeply because what I said to him was if halakha is intended to give you a behavioral code of what you should do and not do, and then you end up intending to violate the code but you don't, you would think that would take precedence, but he said no. There, you have to separate action from intent. So, if your intent was bad, but the action didn't result in something bad happen, then that's it.
Right.
But he didn't bring up the second point that you did, which is you still have to do tshuva because you had a bad intent.
Right.
An open question and an ongoing one.
We agreed it was a deep issue.
Well, all right. Now, 10 lines to the bottom on Sadi 10 of Bays. Okay, let's take a look. Okay, bye, Rafa.
Livia has a question.
All right. Livia, you have a question?
Just a comment. I just want to say to Robert that, it shows the Rachmanut of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for me, theologically speaking. I just want to share that with you.
All right. All right, let's see further. Okay, now.
I'm sorry, I didn't follow. Just say what you said again, I'm sorry.
It shows the Rachmanut of our faith. That, you know, there are a lot, you hear orthodoxy is legalistic and cruel, and no, the fact that when you there was intent, but you didn't do the, and you have the hook. I see that as the rachmanut, the mercifulness of our religion.
Very right. Excellent. Thank you.
All right. Now we're 10 lines from the bottom. Okay, by Rava, Zarak Daf, Benach al Gabi Yateidot Mahu. Let's say I have a board, I'm in the Rishus HaRabim, and they only have these cases like this in the Gemara. There's a series of like pegs or stakes that are in the Rishus HaRabim, and the pegs are 10 tefachim from the ground. And now I take a board, and I'm standing, let's say, 3 amot away. I throw the board, and the board lands on top of all the pegs. So now the board, in landing, creates a Rishus HaYachid, right? Because now it's, you have a surface that's 4x4 on top of pegs that are 10 tefachim high. So let's take a look. So the Gemara says, "By Rabbi Zarak Daf and Nachal Gabi Teder Mahu." So the Gemara says, "My Kama Baile, what was Rabbi bothered about?" He says, "Hanachar Chayfetz Vasiat Mechitza Bahadei Adali Kaatu." Lechora, he's asking the same question that Rabbi Yochanan asked above. He's asking where I'm doing the Hanacha and the at simultaneously the Rishus is created. So that's really, you know. So the Gemara says, Hainud Rabbi Yochanan. That seems like the same sort of question that Rabbi Yochanan asked, you know, when I do an Akira and I create the Rishus, or I do a Hanacha and I destroy the Rishus. So the Gemara is, Kim Kamabayla the Rava, Yon Dezarak Daf Chayfetz Al Gabav. Moi. Now, Rava's question was a little bit more complex. Rava said, let's say I throw the board, on top of the board is another Cheftza. So it's hard for me to think of a Cheftza that would be, go with this well. But let's say I have a pair of binoculars on top of the board. So I have a board, it's 4 Tzvachim by 4 Tzvachim. On top of the board I have these binoculars, and then I throw it. It can be a short distance away. It could even be 2 feet away from me, because then the board lands, and then the, on top of it, the binoculars land as well. He says, so my, came into Bahadiyadari Ka'atu, Kanachar Chefetz Vasit Mechitzadami. It may be, do we say, like, that's the Zelbazach, the same thing. Everything's happening simultaneously, and we were not able to resolve that before. O Dilma, came into Efshar, Lo Midla Purta, Bahadar Niyah, Kasit Mechitzadami Chefetz Dami. Perhaps one could say that it can't be everything happens exactly the same. In other words, if I have an object on top of the board, the object, and even though I'm, let's say, 2 feet away and I throw it, the object, there'll still be a little lag time, like 2 seconds later, the object will land and the board will land and the object will land. So isn't there more of an argument to say that I'm creating the Rishus HaYachid and then the Chefza lands in that Rishus HaYachid that I just created, in which case I should be Chayiv. In other words, there's a short lag time. It might be a second or two, but there's a short lag time. So the Gemara leaves that as a teiku. The Gemara is unable to resolve that question. In other words, it makes it a little more complicated. In other words, it's not exactly simultaneously, but it's close to simultaneous. But you could say it's the same act that created it, and the time lag was very de minimis. So how does that play out? All right, two lines from the bottom, and this will be a little review for Daf Yomi people from today, and you'll help us out with this, Robert. Okay, so I'm a Rava, Pshitali. Rava says, it seems obvious to me, Mayim al gabi Mayim, Hainu anachatan. If I have water on top of water, and we had this earlier in the Masechta, that's the way the Hanacha is. In other words, even though scientists will tell you that water is like constantly moving and there's currents in the water and nothing is like static with the water, nevertheless, that's the way water is. So if I pick up a cup of water, you know, like there's a pool of water, and I lift up something from the pool of water, a cup of water. So that's the akira. In other words, in order to have an akira, something has to be at rest. So that's the way the water is at rest. He says, "Ego is al gabi mayim." But let's say I have a nut that's floating on the water. Let's say I have a walnut, and the walnut is like riding merrily on the water. Live hainu anachatan. So that walnut is not considered to be at rest. So if I lift up the walnut, I haven't done an act of akira, because in order to have an act of akira, the item has to be at rest. It's not at rest. Okay, by Rava, on the top line on Kuf Amud Aleph. Robert, you heard this already today, right? Robert, you heard this part already, right? You all heard it. Okay, so by Rava, Rava asked, Egos Bechli, Uchli Tzaf Al Gabi Mayim. Now we have a fancier nut. This nut is riding in a Kli. So whatever the Kli is, I don't know if it could be a saucer that's floating on the water or whatever, but the nut is riding on the water. He says, Mahu, Miyamrin and Batar, Ego Zazlin and Mahaniyach. Do I just look at the micro, like the smaller picture? The nut is in a state of rest. The nut is not per se in terms of the place where it's resting is static. So do I say that the nut has come to rest and I'm chaya for akira with that? Odilma batar kli azlinan v'haloniach. Or do I say no? I have to look at the bigger picture and the kli is floating, so it's not at rest. So teiku. Now the Gemara says, I'll just do a few more lines. That'll be it. Shemen al gabi yayin. Let's say I have oil on top of wine. Machloket Rabbi Yochum and Uri Rabbanan. Now we know water with water, we said, is at rest. And then, so like things are considered to be at rest, even though they're fluid. And then we said an egos, which is a solid object, which is floating on the water, is not considered to be at rest. What if I have two fluids, but like you said, like oil and water, you know, that they're two fluids, they are both fluids, but one is clearly distinct from the other one. So the Gemara, instead of having oil and water, has wine and water. It has wine and water because that's what the Mishnah is going to be speaking about. Ditnan, because we learn in the Mishnah, this Mishnah is a Masechet Tevul Yom. Now it's talking about Shemen of Truma. Shemen Shitzaf Al Gaba Yayin. I have oil of Truma and wine of Truma. So the oil is floating on the wine. I've never seen oil on wine, really. You know, oil on water I've seen. I've never seen oil on wine, but I assume that the oil floats on top of the wine. So he says here, V'nagat Tevul Yom B'Shemen. A Tevul Yom is somebody who was Tameh and immersed himself in a mikveh, but now has a residual amount of Tumah until nightfall, enough to passel the Tumah. So any Tumah that the Tevul Yom touches, cannot be eaten anymore. So it's V'nagat Tevul Yom B'Shemen. So we said the Shemen and the Yain are both Tumah. V'nagat Tevul Yom B'Shemen. So the Tevul Yom touches the oil, lo passel the Shemen. He only passeled the oil. So not the water. So that's treating it as two different substances. So according to that, it would not be an act of akira because two different substances. Rabbi Yochanan Menuri Omer, Shnei Mechibur Zelazeh. Rabbi Yochanan Menuri says, no, they're both considered attached, so they're both tamei. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who says that they both become tamei, would hold that on Shabbat, if I take some of the oil, I'm doing an act of akira, because even though the oil is floating on the wine, we view it as one large block, just like the water in the water. So that would be an act of akira. But the other one who holds that only the oil is tamei, the other is a different substance, so that would be like the nut floating on the water. Okay, who's got questions, comments, or thoughts on anything we did?
But why would you put oil on wine?
I don't know, but you did.
So he's just doing it as an example?
No. In other words, the Mishnah has a case. A person had wine for truma and he had oil for truma. Maybe he had a leaky kli and he had no kli to put it in except for the kli with the wine. In other words, he's got a barrel or a container with oil of truma, and the container is leaking, and the only kli he has is a half filled container with wine from truma. So he adds them both, and now they're both in the same vessel. And then a tful yom comes and touches the top of the vessel, the oil. So has he been metame the oil or the oil and the wine? So that's machloket. And so that machloket we can extrapolate for Dine Shabbos as well. You're following this or not?
I didn't know if there was some religious significance to putting oil on wine.
Okay, so listen, let me stop the recording. And then any of the questions, anything we did? All right, let me stop the recording.